Good morning, Glenkirk Church friends and family. You know, a couple of years ago when my oldest son was a student at Azusa Pacific University and I was in my first year as the chapel director at APU, we attended a special lecture given by a woman named Maria Suarez. Originally from Mexico, when Maria was 16 years old, she was kidnapped and sold as a slave to a man in Azusa for $200. For 5 years, Maria was held by that man in Azusa, less than 10 miles away from us here at Glenkirk Church. After 5 years of that experience, a next-door neighbor murdered Maria's captor, and then Maria helped them cover up the crime. Maria was arrested, tried, and convicted of her captor's murder. So at 21 years old, after 5 years of being a slave, Maria was sentenced to 25 years at a California state prison. While Maria was in prison, she learned to speak English. She studied and passed her GED. She began to take college classes, and she began to realize that she had a gift for counseling and advocacy of victims. And then after more than 22 years of incarceration, Maria was pardoned by our governor and given permanent residency to stay in the U.S. as a victim of human trafficking. She was 44 years old when she was released. And Maria went on to become a victim's advocate and founded the Maria Suarez Foundation to end human trafficking. And as my son and I listened to Maria tell her story that day, we were both struck by the fact that Maria, despite her experiences, never gave in to powerlessness and helplessness. Maria's story reminded me that sometimes people who seem to have the least influence can actually do the most good. We're in a series called Living in Exile. And in this series, I've likened this public health crisis that's kept us away from each other and socially distanced and sheltering in home with Israel's exile to Babylon in the Old Testament. Israel's exile in the 6th century shows us how we as God's people can live out our faith during a time of social crisis. In this series, we've been looking specifically at a letter that the ancient Hebrew prophet Jeremiah wrote to those exiles about how they could live faithfully to God in the midst of their circumstances. In the first part of this letter, Betsy and I talked about lament. And then last week, I talked about adjusting to our new circumstances, and we saw how a teenage exile by the name of Daniel adjusted in his situation in exile and how he flourished as a result. And so this morning, as we continue this letter from Jeremiah chapter 29, we're going to talk about seeking the good. And we're going to see how two exiles in their own situation were able to seek the good in their circumstances. So let's begin by looking at verse 7 of Jeremiah chapter 29 of this letter that the prophet Jeremiah sent to these people carried away into exile. In verse 7, Jeremiah writes, "Also seek the peace and the prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you too will prosper." How tempting it must have been for these exiles, carried away to these cities in Babylon, to seek the ruin of the city to which they had been called into exile. After all, it was the people in these very cities who were responsible for attacking Jerusalem, burning their temple to the ground, and separating them from their friends and family, carrying them into exile. Why would they even consider seeking the peace and the prosperity of these cities? How tempting it must have been for these exiles to say, "Let these cities burn like they let our city burn." But instead, Jeremiah calls the people of God to actively seek the peace to the city that they were exiled to. Instead of focusing only on themselves and their own survival, Jeremiah asks God's people to lift up their eyes from themselves and to see the people around them. The Hebrew word translated peace in verse 7 is arguably one of the most important Hebrew words in the Hebrew part of the Bible in the Old Testament. It's the Hebrew word shalom. And in the Bible, shalom is more than just a greeting, hello. Shalom is peace, but it's the kind of peace that results in health and wholeness, flourishing, completeness, reconciliation, and restoration. In fact, our English translation renders the word shalom peace and prosperity here because just one English word can't capture the full depth of shalom's meaning. And the prosperity of shalom isn't merely economic prosperity, it's human flourishing. In fact, I would sum up the word shalom with the phrase the good. When God's people are in exile, they are to seek the good of their communities. Not just their own good, but the common good. And as the city that we are in experiences God's shalom, God's people will also experience God's peace as well. And so in a social crisis, like an exile or a pandemic, we often feel powerless. It feels like there's nothing that we can do because the crisis is so big and there's so many powers involved. And it's tempting in those situations to turn inward, to only see ourselves and our losses. But Jeremiah reminds us that we are not powerless. No matter how difficult or challenging our circumstances might be, that we can always still find ways to seek the common good, to seek the peace of the city. And that in fact, our well-being as God's people is connected to the well-being of the communities in which we live. So we can't afford to give in to helplessness, to become self-absorbed and obsessed with our own losses and our own rights. We can't afford to write off the people and the communities around us, ignoring them or criticizing them or condemning them. Because God calls us to seek the common good of the community that we're in. And I want to talk about how two exiles did just that. Mordecai and Esther sought the peace of their city. And we find their story in the Old Testament book of Esther. And just to give an overview of the book, I want to show a brief video. And if you're at home and if you have kids around, this would be a great time to corral your kids into the room to watch with you as we give this brief video to give an overview of the book of Esther. So check out this video.
King Ahasuerus was the king of Persia. Many years earlier, when Cyrus was king, he sent some of God's people back to Judah to rebuild the temple in Jerusalem. Some of God's people stayed in Persia. God's people were called Jews because they were from Judah. The king of Persia chose Esther to be his queen. Esther didn't tell the king that she was a Jew. One day, Mordecai heard that Haman, an important leader who worked for the king, was planning to kill all the Jews. Mordecai was upset. He was a Jew. He didn't want all the people he loved to be killed. Mordecai and all the Jews cried. Esther didn't know what was wrong. She sent a messenger to ask Mordecai why all the Jews were upset. Mordecai told Esther about Haman's evil plan. "You have to do something," Mordecai said. "Ask the king to stop Haman. Ask him to save the Jewish people." Esther sent a message back to Mordecai. "No one can approach the king unless the king calls for that person first," Esther said. "The punishment is death. Unless the king holds out his scepter, then you may live." "You're a Jew," Mordecai said. "If you don't stop Haman, he will kill you too. Maybe this is why you are the queen. Maybe God put Esther in the palace to save her people." Esther asked Mordecai and the Jews to fast for 3 days. Then Esther would go to the king, even if it meant she might die. On the third day, Esther went to the king. He saw Esther and held out his golden scepter. "What is it, Queen Esther?" the king asked. "What do you want to ask me? I'll give you anything, up to half of my kingdom." Esther said, "Would you and Haman come to a feast today?" So Haman and the king went to Esther's feast. After eating, the king said, "What do you want, Queen Esther? I'll give you anything, up to half of my kingdom." "Come to my feast tomorrow," Esther said. The king agreed. The next day, Haman and the king went to Esther's feast. After eating, the king said, "What do you want, Queen Esther? I'll give you anything, up to half my kingdom." Esther spoke up. "There is a plan to kill me and my people," the king replied. "Who is responsible for this plan?" "This evil enemy, Haman," Esther said. The king was angry. He punished Haman and made a law to keep the Jewish people safe from their enemies. God was in control over Haman's evil plan to destroy the Jews. Like Haman, Satan wants to ruin God's plan and destroy believers. Satan thought he had won when Jesus died on the cross, but God raised Jesus from the dead and defeated Satan once and for all. All who believe in Jesus are rescued from sin and death.
So after seeing that overview, let me talk about a couple of the characters in the book of Esther. First is Xerxes, the king of Persia. The video called him King Ahasuerus, which is also one of his throne names. After the Babylonian and the Median empires collapsed, the Persian Empire emerged as the next ancient superpower. And Xerxes, the king, was in many ways a typical ancient king. Egotistical, narcissistic to the extreme, given to bouts of rage and extreme vanity, constantly drunk, often unpredictable. The second character in our story is Mordecai. Mordecai was a Jewish exile who had been carried into exile by the Babylonians like Daniel had years earlier. But after Babylon collapsed, Mordecai somehow finds himself in Susa, the capital of Persia in modern-day Iran, still in exile. The third character is Esther, also a Jewish exile. Esther's Hebrew name is actually Hadassah. Esther is her Persian name. And Esther was born in exile, and both of her parents died when she was young, and so Mordecai, who's her uncle, raised her. The fourth character is a man named Haman, a powerful politician in the Persian government. More about him in a minute. And finally, the last character in the story is God. The book of Esther is actually the only of the one of the 66 books of the Bible that never actually mentions God. The very absence of mentioning God in the book of Esther is actually a literary device that's designed to call our attention to the fact that God is unseen, present throughout the story, but working in unseen ways. That's our cast of characters. So let me set up the part of the story that I want to focus on today about how Esther and Mordecai lived out. Verse 7 of Jeremiah 29. In chapter 1 of Esther, King Xerxes, King Ahasuerus, throws a party for himself and invites all of the rich and powerful people from Persia to attend. Probably TMZ was even there at his invitation. And the king's party was what people might today call a real rager. It had an open bar paid for by the king, and it lasted several days. And while the party was going, the king got really intoxicated, and at one point he demanded that his wife, Queen Vashti, make an appearance at the party so he could show her off to the guests as his trophy wife. But Queen Vashti refuses, and that causes a scandal, and it makes the king look really bad to all of his guests. And in a rage, the king decides to find a new queen. And so the king's nobles search far and wide throughout Susa, the Persian capital, to find every beautiful unmarried woman they can. And these women are all conscripted by the government and forced into the king's harem. And then the nobles devise a reality show. A reality show to determine which of these young women in the king's harem will become the new queen. But this reality show isn't like The Bachelor, because these contestants didn't audition or sign up for their part. It's more like the Hunger Games version of The Bachelor. And Esther is one of the young women forced into the king's harem and chosen as a contestant for this reality show. Because she has no other choice, Esther goes along with all the rules of the game. In fact, at every turn in the story, Esther finds favor with the people around her. And at the end of the reality show, King Xerxes gives his red rose to Esther, and she becomes his new queen. So consider Esther's position here. On the one hand, Esther has lots of influence. She's now called the Queen of Persia. She's well taken care of. She lives in a palace. She eats good food. She enjoys all of the privileges of palace life. But on the other hand, she's a captive. She's powerless. She's been forced into her role without her consent, not all that different from Maria Suarez. And that brings us to verse 20 of Esther chapter 2, which says, "But Esther had kept secret her family background and nationality, just as Mordecai had told her to do, for she continued to follow Mordecai's instructions as she had done when he was bringing her up." Mordecai had urged Esther throughout her life to keep her identity as part of the Jewish people, the people of God, hidden. You see, Mordecai knows that Persia is filled with a deep hatred of Jewish people, something that would later be called anti-Semitism. And so in order to navigate those dangerous circumstances, Mordecai has urged Esther to keep her Jewish identity secret. So Esther adapts to her circumstances, much like Daniel did in Babylon, but unlike Daniel, Esther also conceals her identity. And this is the first way Esther and Mordecai sought the good of their community, by living wisely in their setting. They sought the good by living wisely in their setting. It may sound strange to us, but it was wise for Esther to conceal her identity given the uniqueness of her circumstances. You see, in the Bible, wisdom is the capacity to read your unique circumstances and then to live skillfully within those circumstances. And Mordecai had discerned that it would be dangerous for people to know that his niece, Esther, was Jewish. And so in wisdom, he urged her to live in the way that she did. What does living wisely look for us today? We're obviously in a very different setting than ancient Persia and than Esther and Mordecai were in then, but we still need wisdom to live skillfully within our circumstances today. And especially during this public health crisis where our social media feed and cable news channels are constantly bombarding us with conflicting ideas about what should and shouldn't be happening right now. It can be bewildering. And when I think about wisdom, I think about the description of godly wisdom from the book of James. James 3:17 says this, "The wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure. Then it's peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere." I think James 3:17 gives us a pretty good job description of what living in wisdom looks like for God's people today. Now, a little bit later in chapter 2, Mordecai overhears a plot to assassinate King Xerxes. And Mordecai reports the plot to Esther, and Esther in turn warns the king. And as a result, the plot is uncovered and King Xerxes' life is saved. And this is the second way that Mordecai and Esther sought the peace, the good of their city, by protecting the lives of those around them. By protecting the lives of those around them. Living as God's people during a social crisis is not merely about protecting ourselves. It's about protecting the lives of those around us. That's part of seeking the peace of the city. When you think about it, Mordecai and Esther would have every reason to want to see this assassination plot against King Xerxes succeed. After all, the king has taken Esther captive into his harem, compelled her to compete in this strange reality show. His death would mean her release, regaining whatever freedom she had before. Why not just say nothing and let the plot unfold? But instead, Esther and Mordecai sought the good, the common good, by warning the king and saving his life. God calls us as his people to protect the lives of those around us as well. I was so encouraged yesterday to see 55 of our people donate blood. What a great way to practically live that out. And as we follow the public health orders from our county and state with social distancing, and believe me, I'm just as sick of them as you are. It's been 11 weeks since I've had a haircut, and many of you are struggling with other ways. But that is just a tangible way that we can protect the lives of those around us. Now, in chapter 3 of Esther, the politician Haman, who I mentioned earlier, concocts a plan to kill all of the people of God in Susa. And Haman persuades King Xerxes to issue a kill order to murder all the Jewish people on a particular day. This order was a death sentence for Mordecai and for all of the other Jewish exiles throughout Persia. And so in chapter 4 of Esther, Mordecai goes to Esther, urging her to use whatever influence that she might have with the king to intercede on behalf of the people of God. And in chapter 4, verse 14, we actually find probably the most famous and well-known verse from the book of Esther. Let me read it. Mordecai says to Esther in verse 14, "For if you, Esther, remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you might have come to your royal position for such a time as this." Mordecai urges Esther to consider her unique circumstances and to consider the possibility that God has allowed her to be in her own unique situation, as hard and challenging as it was, for exactly the purpose of saving her people. This verse reminds me of a scene from The Lord of the Rings. I think it's in The Two Towers, when Frodo says to Gandalf, "I wish these things didn't happen in my life and in my time." And wise Gandalf responds by saying, "So do I, and so do all who live to see such times. But that is not for them to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time given us. This is the third way that Mordecai and Esther sought the common good, by stewarding the opportunities God gave them. Stewarding the opportunities that God gave them. As God's people, our lives are not our own. Our lives belong to Jesus. And as followers of Jesus, we may find ourselves in hard circumstances and challenging situations, and even in the midst of a public crisis. Esther found herself as an orphan in exile in Persia, forced into the king's harem. Christians around the world today often face deadly persecution for their faith. Christians throughout the centuries have faced things like famines and droughts, wars and disasters. And here we are during a public health crisis. We don't control the times in which we live, but we can steward the opportunities that God gives us during those times. As we admit that our lives are not our own, as we begin to look at our lives the same way that Mordecai is urging Esther to look at her life, we can begin to see the opportunities around us. Doors may open that we never imagined. And we may find ourselves saying, who knows? Maybe I was brought into this situation for such a time as this. Church, God has been preparing us for these times. This pandemic has not taken God by surprise. He has known it's been coming, and He has been preparing you, preparing me, preparing us for us to steward our lives, our families, our churches, to respond to the opportunities that open to us. Because that's what people in exile do when they seek the good of their city. Now, there are a couple of reasons why Esther was reluctant to approach the king and intercede for her people. One reason is that she would have to reveal her secret to the king that she was part of the people of God. But the other reason is that the king appears to have grown tired of Esther. It's been a month since he's even called for her and spent time with her. And according to Persian law, someone from the harem, even the queen, could not initiate an audience with the king without risking death. The king has all the power. The members of the harem, even the queen, have no power. So for Esther to initiate an audience with King Xerxes could likely result in her execution. But in chapter 5, she does just that. And the rest of the book of Esther tells the story about how God uses Esther's intervention to save all of God's people. This is the fourth way that Esther and Mordecai sought the good of their city, by living out their faith with courage. Living out their faith with courage. What does living out our faith with courage look like during this public health crisis? I mean, who could have ever imagined that people working in grocery stores and factories would be getting hazard pay? I think of the courage of those in essential roles, like those working in grocery stores and truck drivers, first responders, healthcare professionals, food processing plant workers, scientists, and epidemiologists. I think of those of you who've shown courage by caring for your neighbors and reaching out to your community. We seek the common good by living out our faith with courage. The book of Esther ends with a celebration. And ever since, Jewish people have celebrated what happened in the book of Esther on an annual holiday called Purim. During Purim, people exchange gifts. They read the book of Esther as the kids dress up as the characters and act out the parts. That's how they remember this crisis and how they sought the good of their city. I wonder how you and I will look back years from now and remember this time. I hope we don't remember this time that we're in as a time that we turned inwardly. that we complained about all the unfairness of it all, that we became self-absorbed, and we lived our lives in fear. I hope that's not the story we tell. I hope the story that we tell is how we sought the peace of the city, the common good, by living wisely, by protecting the lives of those around us, by stewarding the opportunities that God opens to us, and by living out our faith in Jesus with courage. I pray that's the story that we tell. Let's pray together. Father, thank you for examples like Mordecai and Esther. In challenging, difficult circumstances, but who lived wisely, who lived with courage. God, you have been preparing your church for this time. May we rise to this occasion and be and live as the people of God that you've called us to. Help us not be controlled by fears. Help us not grow inwardly and focused only on ourselves. May we seek the peace of our communities, the common good, for your glory, and in Christ's name, amen.